Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that.
Yeah.
No hassle.
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03, Wednesday afternoon, March 5th. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart. Medical debt is one of the leading causes of bankruptcy in the U.S. We'll discuss ways to deal with it in our next segment. Right now, trade tensions are escalating while job growth in the private sector slows significantly. Let's take a closer look with Paul Christopher, head of Global Investment Strategy at the Wells Fargo Investment Institute in St. Louis. Paul, thank you for joining us today. And with all the tumult taking place in the world of trade on North America, we almost forgot, Paul, that this is a jobs week. And with jobs week, you have two numbers. You have the government report on Friday morning, and then you have the private payroll report that comes out on Wednesday morning. And the private payroll report came in well below analysts' expectations.
Yeah, that's right. Let's keep in mind, though, that it's been a very difficult winter. These things on a monthly basis can move up and down depending upon idiosyncratic factors, just like the weather. So we're not going to make a prediction for Friday's jobs report. We have seen some big declines in sentiment, though, and that may be kind of enticing people to see the silver cloud rather than the silver lining.
Now, it should also be pointed out, and we say this every month, is that the methodology that ADP, the payroll processor, you probably, we all see it on our virtual paychecks these days, and the government jobs report, it's different methodology, different ways of arriving at their conclusion, and as a result, the numbers tend to be wildly different.
Yeah, that's right. And that's another reason just to take today's number with a grain of salt. Look around and see some of the other numbers that came out today. Durable goods beat expectations. Services were in expansion during February. So there's no real clear direction lower here, just because you happen to have a weak employment number today, and you're accompanying that with some uncertainty that's really more policy than economic related.
Now, the big story of the week, of course, has been the imposition of tariffs on Mexico and Canada, and the Commerce Secretary coming out now saying that some of those Canadian tariffs could potentially be delayed or just done away with entirely. This is a fluid situation, but in the world of business where you need certainty to make decisions, how do you process the last couple of days?
Yeah, this is really tough with tariffs flying right and left and tariff threats flying right and left. One thing we want to do is try to keep our eyes on the destination instead of just the headlines. And the destination here is that the president and his administration want to see more production return to the United States, but they also want to see Canada and Mexico help us more with immigration and the flow of fentanyl across our border. And so we don't know what's going on at the high level where the prime minister of Canada or the president of Mexico may be saying, hey, you know what, let's take a look at this. And let's talk about this some more. The other thing that could easily be happening is that automakers and other industrial leaders are getting to the president saying, hey, look, this is going to have more of an economic impact than what you're imagining or what you're expecting. And so the costs may outweigh the benefits. And so this is an administration that seems to be at least thinking about that kind of a balance.
Paul Christopher, head of global investment strategy at the Wells Fargo Investment Institute in St. Louis. Thank you for joining us today on the Noon Business Hour. Coming up, strategies to help you handle medical debt.
Information to make cash and save cash. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday. Dealing with medical debt can be overwhelming, but there are steps that you can take to help manage it effectively. Let's get some direction from Amy Wilburn, bankruptcy attorney at Gravis Law in Tacoma, Washington. Amy, thank you for joining us today. And medical debt is a burden for millions of Americans, and it is one of those situations where it's to pay for a procedure that could literally save your life. You can't really say no to a medical expense, especially if your life or the life of a loved one is on the line.
That's correct, and thank you for having me again, Rob. 68% of bankruptcies, more than two-thirds, are filed because of medical debt. It's not irresponsible spending. Like you pointed out, it is people who really don't have a choice. There's no time to shop around for who's going to offer you the best price on an MRI before you have brain surgery, that kind of thing. So, yes, it's necessary. It's not something that anybody really chooses, but it's a huge burden on many Americans.
Now, what are some things that you can do to stay on top of it, especially as your medical journey is underway, as the bills are coming in, as you're starting to really get your head around, just how much a particular medical procedure costs from start to finish?
I would say is something that's not very sexy or fun is when you get those bills or you get the explanation of benefits from your insurer, if you have insurance, review them. Billing departments do make mistakes. Coders go in there. They're human. They make mistakes. So double check for anything that you might have been double charged or not charged for that you were supposed to have been charged for, that kind of thing. So definitely review those things. The second idea that I would have is stay in touch with the business office of your provider. They will offer all kinds of affordable payment plans. At hospitals, there's something called charity care, where if you have a big bill, you contact their business office, and they have funds available to wipe out some of that debt.
And how is medical debt reported on your credit report? And more importantly, at what point is your medical debt or can it be sold to a collection agency?
It absolutely can and is sold to collection agencies. Beginning in January of 2023, so 2 years ago, medical debt, whether it was from your original medical provider or from a credit reporting agency, it is not supposed to have been reported to the credit reporting bureaus, the three biggies. And then recently, January of this year, there were some actions put into place that made sure that no medical debt would be reported on your credit report. So definitely keep looking at those things. Again, not super sexy, but kind of fun when you know you're cleaning things up. And make sure that those bills, those debts that are not supposed to be on your credit reports, you want to make sure that you're double checking them and disputing them if they are on there.
And at what point is your medical debt typically sold to a collections agency? And how do you get to that point? Is it just any outstanding balance, or does it have to be a balance that has not been paid for a very long time?
It's generally, they will give you a long leash. They will try to collect from you for a long time. There's no standard period of time, but they will try. You'll get those phone calls. You have this debt. And then they will send it over to a credit reporting agency, to a collection agency. However, if you are in touch with them, if you're working with them, if you say, I will pay you $25 a month, something so that you're at least communicating with them, then that will prevent it from going to a collection agency.
Now, this may seem like a very intimidating process, and I think a lot of people just don't like the idea of endless phone calls and staying on hold and listening to on hold music. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, it seems like a hospital or a medical facility or even a collection agency, they want some money. And if you can arrive at an arrangement in which they get paid something, you're better off.
I agree. If your debt has already been sold to a collection agency, they have purchased that debt for pennies on the dollar. So if you have a little bit of cash reserves, if you have putting away money instead of paying those medical debts as they come up, then they might settle with you for, again, pennies on the dollar. If you offer them 50, 60% of what they're owed, even 40%, they will often settle that for you, and then it's done and over with.
Amy Wilburn, bankruptcy attorney at Gravis Law in Tacoma, Washington. Thank you for joining us today. Coming up next, it may not be wise to post details of your vacation on social media.
This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
We all do it. However, sharing your travel and vacation plans on social media is a really bad idea. Joining us to discuss things to consider before you hit post is Mark Walters of Walters World Travel and Culture. He's got a YouTube channel. He's also an associate professor of business administration at the University of Illinois Geese College of Business in Urbana-Champaign. Mark, thank you for joining us today. He or she who is without sin in this particular situation, maybe you can just say they're the lucky ones. They have not learned the hard lesson as of yet.
Yeah, and that's the thing is you get so excited about your travels. You want people to know, I'm going to go to Hawaii. I'm going to go to Europe. But the thing is, you don't want to let people know online before you go or while you're gone because it makes your house a target. Even if you think only my friends are on Facebook with me, you never know what might get found.
And on top of that, I mean, above and beyond just announcing to the world, I'm not home and I'm not going to be home for the next couple of days. You see people posting pictures of their airline boarding passes and maybe hotel keys or other things that could have potentially personally identifiable information.
Yeah, and you think it's just a nice, fun thing, saying, there's my name, I'm going to Paris, but it might have your, you know, your number for your frequent flyer program right on there, and that's something people could use, and they could use it to steal your information, to do, you know, steal your identity, so you want to be really careful with that. But also, there's the safety side of it, because if you're showing your hotel and you're tagging your location right away, like real time, then if you have some kind of stalker or some weirdo, they can come after you when you're there because they know exactly where you are. So it's really important to maybe wait to post those until after the fantastic vacation.
Yeah, I was going to say that is where I have landed. No pun intended. Is that I will not post anything about a vacation until after said vacation is complete and we're back home and I could say, oh, we just got back from Timbuktu and you know this is the world's coolest Applebee's.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things I also do with our videos because we film all over the world, but I never really post when we're in a location just in case. And so people never know, are they home? Are they away? Oh, they're just posting pictures from their last trip. And that can make it a little bit easier, but also it gives you a chance to kind of relive your vacation the couple weeks after you're readjusting to get back to those snowy Chicago nights, you know, when you're thinking about your time in Aruba.
And on top of that, although it's I know that was the fun of Facebook when it first came around was showing off where you were going and what you were doing. But it just takes a couple of ne'er-do-wells to steal people's identity to make you a little more street smart when it comes to walking the streets of social media. Because even though you may think, well, who's interested in where I'm going on vacation? There are all sorts of, you know, AI tools and crawlers and stuff that's constantly combing social media applications, Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, looking for information that can be weaponized against you.
Yeah, and you know, people hear about the athletes that have had their houses robbed while they're at a game. It's because people know that that player is playing on Sunday afternoon from 4 until 10, so he's not going to be home, so then they know that's the time they can go. And by doing that with your social media, you could be announcing, hey, no one's going to be there for a few days. We have a chance to check and see when's a good time to hop in that house and get a few things.
And then more importantly, if you are present and in the moment and you wait to post until you get home, you can enjoy your travel that much more.
Exactly. Then you're not spending all this time trying to make the perfect post about what you want to say about your wonderful time in Jamaica, whereas you can actually enjoy Jamaica and then worry about the perfect hashtag later on when you're back home.
Mark Walters, Walters World Travel and Culture. Find him on YouTube, also an associate professor of business administration at the University of Illinois Geese College of Business in Urbana-Champaign. Thank you for joining us today. Still ahead in Personal Finance Wednesday, putting your income tax refund to work.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. Indeed's sponsored jobs help you stand out and hire fast. With sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Plus, with Indeed sponsored jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/listen. Just go to Indeed.com/listen right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/listen. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
It's that time of year again. My schedule is packed with bracket-busting, three-point shooting, nonstop basketball action. I don't want to miss a second of it. That's why I go for a five-hour energy shot. They're perfect for my days packed with back-to-back games, or whenever my favorite team is playing late. 5-Hour Energy keeps me going during the broadcast and the next morning when I need to get myself up and to work. Visit 5hourenergy.com for great deals and to stock up before tip-off.
Survivor 48 is here, and alongside it, we're bringing you a brand new season of On Fire, the only official Survivor podcast. If you're a Survivor superfan, you won't want to miss this deep dive into every episode where we break down how we designed the game, the biggest moves, your burning questions. It's the only podcast that gives you inside access to Survivor that nobody else can. Listen to On Fire, the official Survivor podcast with me, Jeff Probst, every Wednesday after the show, wherever you get your podcasts.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon, I'm Rob Hart. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. Mayor Brandon Johnson tells a U.S. House committee that Chicago's policies on migrants make it a safer city. New guidelines are issued for mass federal firings after a judge finds many of the pink slips are probably illegal. In Personal Finance Wednesday, an income tax refund can be a valuable financial tool. Political discussions can sometimes be dangerous, especially in the workplace. WBBM Business. The markets are higher right now. The Dow is up 216 points. The NASDAQ is up 103. And the S&P 500 is up 23. We have 48 degrees right now in Chicago with drizzle. It's 12:31, topping our news of the half hour. Mayor Johnson and other big city Democratic mayors are being questioned by the House Oversight Committee over their welcoming policies to migrants, some of which have been in place for decades. This is Republican Congressman Andy Gosar from Arizona.
The Constitution says it is explicit that the federal government has jurisdiction and supremacy over all immigration laws, right? We're the ones who can define that.
Mayor Johnson tells the committee the sanctuary city policies help make the community safer and that they're willing to work with Washington to find solutions.
We need this body's support for these efforts. We are ready to partner with you on the measures we know promote trust and create sustainable public safety.
The Democratic mayors of New York, Denver, and Boston also testified before the committee today. Federal agencies have been given revised guidance for the firing of probationary workers after a judge finds their mass firings were likely illegal.
The Office of Personnel Management sent a revised memo to federal agencies telling department leaders they don't have to take any specific performance-based actions involving probationary workers. CBS News spoke with one such worker last week, devastated after moving to Washington from Alabama and being fired a month later. A federal judge ruled last week that OPM did not have the authority to direct the firing of employees at any other federal agency. Allison Keyes, CBS News, Washington.
It's 12:32 as the noon business hour continues. The markets are higher today. Let's welcome in Art Hogan, Chief Market Strategist, B. Riley Financial, based in New York. Art, Thank you for joining us today. And after a couple of sell-offs based on some rather dire news and, of course, the kicking off of a trade war with Canada, the markets have staged a little bit of a recovery today. And is it merely a case, Art, of investors holding on to that commentary from the Commerce Secretary about how some of those Canadian tariffs could potentially be either reversed or delayed?
Yeah, I think that's been the pattern so far, Rob, when we talk about tariffs. It was two Mondays ago that we came in and had a triple threat of tariffs with Mexico, Canada, and China, and that got pushed out for by a month. And lo and behold, we slide into this week, and they actually put the tariffs into effect, which was, you know, a little bit of shock and awe for markets. We're still down 1,000 points on the Dow this week, so it's not as though we're clawing back a majority of the losses. And when you look at it, it's hard to make any economic sense out of what our end goals are, right? So to the extent that when we think about tariffs and what they actually do, there's hard to come up with any superlatives, right? We know that they're going to raise revenues perhaps, but the other problems is it slows economic growth, it increases prices, it cuts profits, increases unemployment, it worsens inequality and diminishes productivity. So that's where the market's at. It's like, how long does this stick? And I think that's the market's taking a bit of a breather today, hoping that we hear something out of the conversation that the president had with Trudeau this morning and the ongoing conversations that Lutnick and Commerce has had with both Canada and Mexico to see if we can lessen the blow here a little bit. But right now the market's taking that wait and see attitude, but certainly is trying to price in some worst case scenarios.
At what point, though, if this pattern continues where there's negotiation, there are concessions on things that the White House finds to be important, for example, enforcement of making sure that fentanyl doesn't cross the border and stricter border enforcement on the southern border. And then we do this whole thing a month from now and then a month down the road from there. And again, in another month. At what point do people who really thrive on certainty just throw their hands up?
Yeah, I think that's where we're at right now, Rob. It's interesting because uncertainty has really been ruling since the inauguration. We've been drinking from a fire hose of both proposed policy changes and actual policy changes. And, while we're seeing immigration being curtailed, we're certainly seeing cuts in government spending. So lump that all together, and if whether you're a consumer or you're running a company or you're an investor, that's keeping you on the sidelines in terms of making decisions, and that's effectively slowing the economy down. So if that's what the administration was looking for, they're starting to win, and this is not the kind of winning I think they predicted. The real question will be how much of this slowing down of the economy and selling off of markets will it take for them to step in and try to lessen the blow? And I think that, at some level, there is a Trump put out there where he'll say, you know what, we've gone a step too far here, and I use the market as my report card. So, a little bit of pain, perhaps, but, certainly not to the degree that we continue, like we have month over month here.
And then quickly, your take on the ADP report coming in well below expectations. And does that dovetail with the GDP nowcast from the Atlanta Fed that shows the economy currently in contraction?
Yeah, we still got a lot of data to get into that GDP. But right now, the Atlanta Fed GDP now has it minus 2.8%. And that's down from a positive 2.8% a month ago. So to the extent that it's clearly showing a slowing, I think it's a reflection, ADP is a reflection of that uncertainty around corporate America. So if you're running a company, are you actually going out and filling some of those job openings that you have? Or are you taking your time with that? And I think that'll likely show up again in Friday's non-farm payroll number.
Art Hogan, Chief Market Strategist, B. Riley Financial in New York, thank you for joining us today. Coming up next in Personal Finance Wednesday, making the most of an income tax refund.
It's 60 minutes of financial planning. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday. A tax refund offers a valuable opportunity to boost your financial well-being. Let's discuss ways to do that with Sherry Greco-Rikus, co-founder of Rappaport Rikus Capital Management in Chicago and author of the book book, Maximize Your Return on Life. Sherry, thank you for joining us today. And you are bombarded. You are, I am, we are bombarded everywhere, especially at this time of year, with advertising across all forms of media saying, here are ways that you can spend your money as soon as that IRS income tax refund check hits your hot little hands. And maybe instead of going out and just blowing it, maybe you can make it work for you for years to come.
Yes, and it is always exciting when you do get a notice that you're getting a tax refund, and you often feel like, wow, that's found money. But it really isn't. You just didn't pay as much taxes throughout the year. So there are some great things you could do with that tax refund. And the first one I want to talk about is paying down debt, especially if you have a credit card balance. Interest rates have gone up. So if you have a credit card balance that you don't pay off zero, that rate could be in the 20% plus. If you have a home equity line, you may be surprised that that rate has gone up over the last few years. So check your rates on that. Student loans, the rates can be high. So I think the first thing I would love the listeners to do is pay down debt. But there's a lot of other great things you could do with that tax refund for financial success.
Now, first off, before we talk about other things you can do with that income tax refund, we all love the idea of money coming back, but as it was told to me a long time ago, that income tax refund is more or less your interest-free loan to Uncle Sam for the year because you overpaid. So if you're getting an income tax refund that is in the four-figure range, and even though it's great to have a four-figure paycheck hit your checking account, chances are your withholding is a little too high.
And that is a great point because for many, many years, interest rates were at zero. And so it didn't matter. You know, you gave the government an interest-free loan and you were earning zero. But now if you really check into, there are some high interest paying accounts in the 3% and 4%. So why not you earn that? So check your withholding. Maybe check your estimated tax payments, talk with your accountant. If you're getting a huge refund, why let the government have it? Why not you?
Now, let's say before you tackle your withholding and you are getting that huge refund and you've paid down your debts and you still want to make that refund work for you above and beyond a new TV, what are some things you can do with that?
Well, as you know, you and I have talked a lot in the past, but I'm a big believer in an emergency fund. We never know when emergencies happen. So if you don't have 3 to 6 months saved of your living expenses, it's a good opportunity to add to that emergency fund. But if you have paid down your debt, paid all your credit card, have gotten your emergency fund, check your contributions to your 401k. Maybe you can increase that. That's long-term investing. The earlier you do that, time is on your side, and you'll thank me in 40 years or 30 years by increasing that 401k contribution. You also might get a little tax deduction, which can also reduce your taxes. And if you've done all of that, start investing, especially if you're young or no matter what age you are. Invest in an allocation that's right for you. When you're younger, you can put more into stocks. The high risk, high return. As you're older, bond rates have gone up a little bit. You can start investing in some bonds, but start investing. There's so many things you could do with the refund. You know, maybe take a little bit, you know, go get a drink, have a nice dinner. But for the majority of it, you know, pay down debt. Fund your emergency fund, increase contributions to 401k, maybe put some money in an IRA or a Roth and start an investment account or add to your investments.
Sherry Greco-Rikas, co-founder of Rappaport-Rikas Capital Management in Chicago and author of the book Maximize Your Return on Life. Thank you for joining us today. Join us at this time tomorrow for Technology Thursday and still to come, the difficult art of handling political conflict at work and some breaking business news. We hinted at this during the segment with Art Hogan, but President Trump, he will grant a one-month exemption for U.S. automakers from new tariffs on imports from from Mexico and Canada, the latest wrinkle in the trade war with our neighbor to the north.
Money talks as the WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Navigating political conflicts in the workplace can be tricky business. We welcome in Paul Starkman, labor and employment attorney at Clark Hill in Chicago. Paul, thank you for joining us today. And the last 5 weeks or so, let's just go back to when Donald Trump came down the escalator back in 2015. There has been no shortage of opinions on what's been going on in the world since then. And that could result in conflict at work, which could in turn could result in some sticky legal situations for employer and employee.
Absolutely, Rob. Thank you for having me. You're absolutely right that we're in a very heated political climate, and the potential for political clashes and political speech issues spilling into the workplace is very prevalent nowadays, and employers and employees need to be aware of it.
Now, Paul, above and beyond my professional obligation to be a neutral observer on the radio, because that's what people are tuning in for, but I used to do talk radio a couple of years ago, and my belief after doing talk and telling people what I think is that I'm not going to do it unless somebody pays me to do it. It gave me a whole new perspective on opining on the on what's happening in the world. But for those who feel differently, what are some ways in which political conflict can bubble up at work, and then, you know, where does the employer step in? What are the employer's obligations to either nurture this environment or clamp down on it? And then, what are the employees' obligations to each other?
You've hit on a variety of issues that arise in this situation. Employees and employers need to know what their rights are, what their obligations are, and what they can do to try and keep these political clashes from boiling into unprofessional, divisive, and unproductive conversations and confrontations. So one thing that people need to understand is in the private sector, free speech, there are no free speech that applies to employees under the federal laws. There are some states that have protections for political affiliations, but private sector employees do not have that. So they need to be aware of that, and employers can take action based on someone's crossing the line into political speech that becomes divisive and unprofessional. And I think that one of the things that employers need to decide at the very beginning is whether they should remain neutral or whether they are going to take a political stance on an issue of the day. And either way, they need to recognize that this may cause friction in the workplace and affect morale and productivity. Another thing they need to think about is whether they're going to institute policies and procedures, and I think that they should, to keep any kind of discussions about these hot political topics on a professional basis. And when they become aggressive and or hostile, you use your policies to make sure that you are handling these things, one, to calm the situation down, but also to remain neutral and to avoid any potential for claims that you're discriminating against someone based on their religious views, their ethnic views, their national origin, because those types of characteristics are often the cause and the basis for political views and political speech. So it's something that employers and employees need to be aware of and need to recognize that this is a complicated issue, and there are a lot of traps for the unwary.
Paul Starkman, labor and employment attorney with Clark Hill in Chicago. Thank you for joining us today.